Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, won't you go with me?
land, I stand before you humble. Your wish is my command. You are my strength, the better half of me. Come walk along beside me on this path back to intimacy.
Smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy.
Or maybe he's teething.
Maybe it's just a phase.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I'd build secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I'd do the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Black Coffee Talk. I want to start off by thanking our sponsor, CECISFM. And I would also like to mention that business B2B is the empowerment platform for WAMR Radio. We welcome all types of business to get involved with us, and the page and the link to B2B is on the page for WAMR. I want to introduce my guest. Well, first of all, I want to tell you who I am. I'm sorry. I am Black Coffee. I am the CEO and founder of Black Coffee Entertainment and Inspiration, a professional comedian, MC, and motivational speaker. My information can be found on the page as well. I am looking forward to today's topic. Years ago, at the then First Lady Hillary Clinton made famous the quote of, "It takes a village," regarding raising our children. We have had many, many discussions regarding this, but it seems like it has been forgotten. So this topic, we are going to start off with talking about what happened to It Takes a Village. We have a number of guests, and I am going to allow you all to say hello. I would like to introduce Jackie Williams, Sadika Ward, Summer Key Lee, now that she's a married woman, and Electra Evans. Can you ladies say hi for me?
Hey there.
Good evening.
I am going to allow you guys to introduce yourself and tell what your connection is for this topic. So can we start with Jackie Williams?
Sure. Well, I'm a social worker. I've been a social worker for a number of years and worked with a lot of different client groups, families, children, women, men. This topic is near and dear to my heart because the work that I'm currently doing right now is all about working with families who have been torn apart due to different reasons, different stressors, families who are trying to get back together. And so this whole topic of it takes a village comes up all the time in terms of how we, you know, work with families to address the issues that they're trying to resolve in their life.
Okay. Now, can I hear from Ms. Sadika Ward?
Sure. Hello, everybody. I'm Sadika Ward, and I am parenting two boys, and It Takes a Village is something that I've learned through parenting, and I'm very familiar with it as a social worker, and then just as a parent, reaching out and depending on the village in order to be successful in a parenting role is imperative.
Okay. All right, next, I want to hear from Ms. Electra Evans. Electra, are you there? I guess I will need to move on to Ms. Summer T. Lee.
All right.
Summer, we can't hear you. Is there any way we can get you to turn the volume up?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, dear.
Okay. It Takes a Village is something that I have actually had experience with. I am that child that it took a village to raise me. I'm that person. I was in foster care. I know all about the foster system. It took time and people and everything to come together to get me and my sister both raised up properly.
Okay. Now, I also want to introduce my co-host, Mr. Next Level. That was his music that you heard before the opening, telling us to come back to intimacy, and I'm trying to get there. Are you there, Mr. Mario?
Yes, ma'am, I am. How is everybody doing this evening?
Doing great, thank you.
And I am very excited about this topic because, and one of the reasons I wanted to introduce this topic is I come from a situation where it did take a village. I was raised by my grandmother, and my aunts and uncles were there for her. And the ladies in the neighborhood, not just family members, but the ladies in the neighborhood, in particular, Miss Eula May, who used to keep me and keep me safe, and my grandmother could always call on her, and she made me feel loved and worthy. Miss Bertha, Miss Margaret, all these women had an effect in my life. And I realized that I am also a product of that village, and it seems to be missing to me. So can you tell me, direct this to Summer. It Takes a Village, you said, affected your life. I want you to tell me about that, tell all of us about that and how that is.
Okay. Well, with that, I was small, very small, to know what was actually going on in my life at the time. But instead of being bounced in and out of foster care, there was a very special lady that made sure that I was placed in a home of my aunt, who is Dorothy Bethel, rest in peace. She did basically everything to make sure me and my sister had. It took her, it took my grandparents, it took my aunties and uncles, because the things that we had went through were traumatic. And we were so sheltered and broken as children. So it really took everybody, not just that one person, but it took everybody to kind of pitch in and make us feel at home. We really didn't have, we didn't feel, being taken away from our mother, we didn't feel as if that love was there. So it took everybody and time and patience for us to kind of get together and come around to the family.
Okay. And I would like to say that you have turned out to be a very well-spoken, grounded, loving young woman who you just got married and you got some kids, don't you?
Yes, ma'am. I have three beautiful girls and a loving husband.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I also want to open this up to the other callers, the other people around the table. And before I do that, though, I want to make sure I introduce Dr. Johnson. Dr. Dorothy Johnson. Excuse me. Dr. Dorothy Johnson Spite, I want to make sure I can pronounce that right, is with Mothers in Charge. I would like for Ms. Johnson at this time to kind of tell us a little bit about herself. Welcome,
good
Ms.
evening.
Spite.
Thank you. And you did pronounce it right. It's Dorothy Johnson Spite.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad. I hate to mess up people's names.
Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to be with you ladies this evening. Well, I'll just start off by a little introduction of myself. I am a mother who lost a son to gun violence a few years back, 2001 actually. And it was actually the second child I had lost. I lost a little girl to bacterial meningitis also. And just as I was, I guess, maybe recovering, we're all recovering from something. Recovering from her death, colleague was shot 7 times over parking space. So initially,
wow.
I didn't think I was going to live. The trauma and the pain and the grief, I just thought I couldn't do it again. So for a while, I was just totally, I guess, going out this world backwards with self-medicating, all kinds of things to try not to have to deal with the awful pain of burying a child, my second child. But at some point, I guess God spoke to me in a way that I knew I had to live. I had to survive. I had to live with the tragedy, but also, more important, I had to do something with it. So a couple years, 2 years after a colleague was murdered, I started an organization called Mothers in Charge. And it was made up of a few mothers in my city, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who had lost children also to violence. And we wanted to do something about the violence that was rampant in Philadelphia. And so Mothers in Charge was born in a little church in North Philadelphia where mothers came together and said we wanted to do something to address what was happening. We wanted to support one another through the grief and the pain and the trauma, but we also wanted to make a difference. So that's how Mothers in Charge was born 13 years ago. And now we're a national organization, have 12 chapters of Mothers in Charge throughout the country. So we're just doing everything we can to address violence and advocate for safe communities and the help and support that folks who are traumatized and oftentimes victims themselves get the healing in their communities. That's kind of what our goal is to do, because we know that hurt people hurt. And that's kind of what we see in cities across this country. So we're on the front lines every single day, as I said, with the chapters. We go into the prisons, into the schools, into the communities, just do a lot of intervention and prevention work. And we also join hands with other organizations across the city that do like kinds of work, and mission is similar to our mission. Go ahead. What were you going to ask me?
I was going to say, so your organization is a part of that village we're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we know we need in every city across this country. We need that village to be present again.
Okay. I am very excited about the people here. Mr. Mario, also known as Next Level, would you like to contribute anything to this beginning of the discussion? Next Level.
I'm sorry, I'm here. I had my phone on mute. I was cooking. yeah, I definitely, because I grew up in Chicago way back in the day, and that's when, you know, you had permission to come in. And if your kid was outside being managed or whatever, you know, the neighbors had permission to put you in check, you know, and me not having a father growing up, I was exposed to my uncles, my aunts, my godmothers, and different things like that. And they really took me under their wing. I didn't know based on how they did. I thought everybody's family was like that. But through their love and patience and a lot of whoopings, because I was bad as a young kid. I mean, they really, if it hadn't been for them, I would probably be in jail right now.
Yeah, I can see that you were probably a bad kid, Maria.
Oh, well, thank you.
But I'm glad you have turned out the way you have. It's been a benefit to me. So thank you, my brother.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I want to also we're going to take a short break because it's time for some commercials and a little music. And we will come back into this thing head on because with everything that's going on in the world, it takes a village, really needs to be brought back home, in my opinion. But I need to hear the opinion of others as well. So I'm going to send us off into a little commercial and music break, and then we'll get back to it.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
$10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic.
I want you to be my one and only lady. And I want you to be lady, my one and only lady.
Sipping wine by candlelight is the perfect way to spend the night. As we slip deeper into the moon, I'd like to pour my heart out to you. Now, every single word that you're about to hear is from my heart and so sincere, you see. I've thought about it, I've meditated on it, I've even prayed on it. So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is, I want you to be my one and only lady.
Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone back into the conversation. We had just a little slight hiccup here, but we're back. So, Black Coffee, if you could just go ahead on and pick up the conversation from where we left it off, that'd be great.
Okay, I apologize for that slight technical difficulty. Those of you who know me know I am somewhat technologically challenged at times, and this was one of those times. So I apologize greatly. But I wanted to pick the conversation up on this. We are seeing a trend of many of our children lost in all communities where there doesn't seem to be any oversight outside of the parents. In Dallas, Texas, there were four, I think it was four police officers who caught these five police officers.
Right.
So if these five police officers who caught these young boys breaking into a mall and they spanked them. Parents said they had no right to discipline their children, but the police officers responded, yes, we do, because it takes a village, and we're doing our part. Rather than taking them to jail, they spanked them. Now, we don't have to discuss spanking versus not spanking, but I am addressing the issue of having somebody that can correct your child when they are wrong. Now, I want to talk with Jackie Williams. And Jackie, I want you to tell me a bit about what it is you do with young families. And I really want to know what you're seeing as a trend with families in crisis as far as having a circle of support.
Okay. Well, you know, professionally in my work, what we're seeing is we see kind of like a cycle of things happening. So, you know, we've heard it before, this kind of generational issues facing families. And so what I see in my work with families is, you know, parents have learned some healthy and then some unhealthy ways in terms of raising their children. And, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about a village, because a lot of the families that I work with, there is a village there. And sometimes it's strong, and then sometimes it's not so strong. So the trend that I see is, you know, when families, by the time a family makes it to an agency like the agency that I work for, you know, something major has broken down. So what I see is a cycle where it's not working properly, where there's generational maybe violence, maybe generational abuse, generational poverty. There's a village there, but the village is not working cohesively together in a healthy way. And so part of what we try to do is we try to help whoever it is that's come to us, the parent, the mother, the father, the child, we try to help them to identify, well, who's important in your life? Who do you want to be a part of this change process with you? Because we recognize that just that mom or just that dad changing things is not enough. So we try to help them to identify and recognize who's important in their life to bring them into the fold of the whole change process. But to answer your question, the trend that I see is that generational piece. And it's such a challenge in breaking it, but it is possible to break that pattern that happens over and over again. So that's definitely one of the trends that I see, that people want to do right, but what's all around them is somewhat dysfunctional too, you know, and people want to know how to change that. So they can have healthier lives for their families.
I want to invite Sadika in. Thank you very much, Jackie, for your input. And, of course, I'll be calling on you some more during this conversation. But I want to hear from Sadika and her views on this as well. Sadika, are you still with us? Okay, well, I want to take this this opportunity to introduce Joy and allow her to tell us about herself.
Thank you, Black Coffee. My name is Joy Jones, and I've worked in the area of
with Human Services for over 25 years in both Georgia and Wisconsin, and mostly in nonprofit. And have really, you know, one thing when you have an expansive career in human services and specifically kind of child welfare, you think about when you were initially in the field and how things have changed now. And, you know, when I think about a village, I think, that, you know, you think about conceptually a village kind of started in Africa, it takes a village, and then we adopted it here. But the village just looks very different. And so now families have to contend with not necessarily just the neighbors or the community, but social media. You know, that now is the village for not only the adults, but the kids. And so those are the challenges. When your child comes home and they are, you know, being bullied, you know, in school and as cyber. And so when I thought about this topic, I thought about, boy, the village has really changed. It looks quite different.
Very different.
And so, and are we prepared for that? I don't think we are, because it's a tool we use, but it's the world is flat or is it not flat? And, you know, you can be communicating with somebody in Africa. You can be in somewhere across the waters or just across the pond. So those are the challenges that families experience now that was not something they experienced 25 years ago. I think, you know, the biggest impact to families really, to me, still is poverty. You know, I think that is when I see different communities that are struggling, you know, the incestuous part of poverty that's integrated throughout our communities is just vast. And so it's hard when you're in a school system that's not working, when you can't walk out your house and that's not working, when you don't have coping skills, that's not working. You know, and so it's just all of these are challenges to our family.
Okay. And I agree with you totally. We are facing so many challenges as we expand and move around, and sometimes I know for me, you know, growing up, my grandmother raised me, and when my aunts married and had children, they brought them to me to help, you know, to babysit and help them raise them, and we've all remained close because of that, even though we moved off. But I'm going to bring back in Sadika Ward, because I know Sadika is a transplant here and is raising children. So I want to hear what she thinks about her village.
Thank you, Jackie. And it's interesting that you use the word transplant, because that's exactly what's coming to mind for me when I think of the It Takes a Village. And it's challenging raising children, because in America, we are taught you go to college, you travel, you see the world, you move off on your own to a different place and kind of, you know, get your own house and start your family. But that's actually what's hurting our village from my perspective, is that we're away from our families. We're away from those support systems that should naturally be in place. And we're in foreign lands like Atlanta, and we're not from here, and we're looking for grandma to help out when you're working a little bit late. We're looking for, you know, for a sister where you can send the children off to in the evening so that you can do something, or, you know, and the cousins aren't there. And I think that's doing us a disservice by moving away from our village, and then we're asking the question of, well, where is the village at? And everybody's feeling alone and isolated. You know, as a parent, you know, as a parent and a transplant, I definitely can relate to that and feeling isolated and alone and having been a part of so many villages and still being a part of other people's village. There are times that you will wonder, where is my village? Where is my help? And as a social worker, I have great relationships with great people who are familiar with this concept, and you still feel alone. What about those people who don't have the same resources available?
Right.
You know, and so it just puts us in a very interesting place. What I would love to see as a solution, I think we need to get back to educating people to stay closer at home. You know, go travel. But when you're ready to have those children, I encourage people, have your children in a place that's close to where you have some support so that we can get that back. And then you can discipline your nephew, you can discipline your niece, you can say something to those people without there being so many repercussions because you told a child to pull their pants up.
You know I can discipline mine because I tell them if they call me auntie, whether it's blood related or not, they're going to get some straightening if they need it.
Jackie, I want to add a little on to what Sadako just said because I totally agree and identify with her being a transplant as well. Being over here, I am part of the village for my little mini family that's here. And, you know, I have a family member here who has a child who has some serious mental health and emotional issues. And I realized that it is super hard to do this without a whole collective of people. You know, it's very, very isolated, and it's a difficult thing to do without that village that we just spoke of. Another thing that I just want to kind of like add on to in terms of what can make a change, because I heard Sadaka talk about making a change, one of the things is kind of a reframing of what we think of as strong, because some of the parents that I see, they view it as being strong to do it alone. You know, and it's just such a disservice that they think, you know, if I can't, you know, I'm a single mom and I'm going to do this on my own. And then they get stressed and then they make, you know, someone might make a poor choice because they're super stressed and they don't have that extra support. So in terms of ways to make things to promote change, you know, just challenging that idea of what does it mean to be a strong caregiver, a strong parent in the life of a child? What does that really mean? Does it mean doing it alone or does it mean developing that support network where you have people around you so when you feel like you're about to lose it, you can call somebody as opposed to losing it on your child?
Yeah, you're so right. I want to thank you both, Sadaka and Jackie, for commenting on that. I want to also ask Summer, in her unique perspective, having been a child of foster care as well as having children of her own that she is parenting, I want to know about your village, Summer. What is it that is special about your village, and how does that play in your life today? I'm sorry, Summer, are you not there? Okay, what about Ms. Johnson Spites? Are you still on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
I want to hear your take on what you've heard all of us saying, and especially with you all being, your organization being nationwide.
I've been listening, and points made were well taken. I mean, I think the family or the family structure, the foundation has been the foundation of us as a people. And for many different reasons, it seems like it has changed. And I'm not quite sure. I guess there's so many factors, like was mentioned earlier, poverty, poor educational systems, the separation of families, moving in different directions and in different places kind of plays on that piece that we talked about in terms of the family being the village. And I don't know how to get it back, but I think that's part of what we've got to figure out. You know, what kind of morals and values and things that we can go back to. That was the foundation of who we were, you know, and looking out for one another. The families now are so disjointed for many different reasons, and I think we need to figure out how we bring that back. And maybe it doesn't look like the family that we knew. You know, maybe now a family could be, you know, a group of moms trying to save their children. You know, that could be a family, you know, or a group of educators trying to do a better job of educating our children. That could be the family in the village. So we've got, you know, it may not look like the mom and the grandmom and everybody that lived in the same household or in the same block anymore. But we've got to go back to the basic structure of the village. That's kind of my take on it. I'm not, like I said, I'm not quite sure how we do it, but I think that's going to be a very important part of how we try to figure this all out.
As a matter of fact, I think that input was fabulous because as Sadika spoke and Jackie Williams also spoke about the fact that even though they're transplants, they've developed they've developed this pseudo family. And so have I, because I'm from South Georgia. I'm from the country. And I still kind of conduct myself as country, and don't, none of y'all that know me say nothing. But what I'm finding is that I've created pseudo families, and I got little sisters here, and I got big sisters here, and I got pseudo mothers and fathers and pseudo children, because everybody's children call me auntie, and they know they. I don't mind snatching them if I need to. But, okay, I wasn't supposed to say that. Don't send defects after me, y'all. But the question is to the pose to the rest of you ladies, do you think that it's possible to create this pseudo family in the society that we live in?
Well, this is Joy, and I think it's possible, and I think it's happening, right? So it's not that, you know, everything is a lot. I think it's happening. I think it's, I love what the last caller said. I think it is a challenge to go back and recreate something, you know, and back to where it was. That's probably gone. But then how to create that world, and I think people of color do it well, more than any other group, because we, you know, we do move together as a group for safety and security. But what is going to look like I have a circle of friends and supports. I was a single mom, you know, but I hate using the word single mom, because I realized there's no way in the world I now have adult children that I could have gotten them to this point without the help of others. So I shy away from using the term single mom, but I created a network with my graduate school friends and friends who were involved in my life to help me raise my kids, because being a single mom, there was some risk to that, of not having support. But how do you make sure others have that? You know, that's what, you know, those who are all different, you know, economic spectrums, how do they have that support, and what does that look like, and is it functional? You know, you can have a whole bunch of people around you and be very dysfunctional. You know, but a functional group that supports you, that's what's critical.
Exactly. And I'm really surprised, because in some circles I would be considered dysfunctional, but I tend to keep picking up people who want me as a part of their village. So I truly appreciate that. I wanted to let everybody know that's listening that the chat line is open. You can put your questions, your comments on, and we will be glad to read those. Also, the call-in line is open if you have any questions that, you know, you would want us to address. And as we go back to that, I know we've been having some technical difficulties with a couple of people that we had on, and I apologize for that. But I want to move on into saying, what can we come up with some suggestions as to what we need to do in our own communities, individually or as collectives? One of my suggestions has been, and I know it's a little strange for some people, and this might not be everybody's way of doing things, but I found that in stores, if I meet people in the eye and smile at them and say hello, and speak to little children and encourage them when they're doing things well, I tend to attract people that never quite leave. So what are some of the suggestions about what we can do individually? And I want to hear from Next Level on this as well.
Okay, for me, I want to start with like what I spoke about in the beginning, about not knowing my father at all, period. What that did for me was it showed me what kind of man I didn't need to be. You know what I mean? So I made it a point to be active in my kids' life. And being active in your kids' lives means, for me, that you have to lead by example. Because I can't tell you how to conduct yourself as a man if I'm not conducting myself as a man. Unless I'm saying, look, this is what I did to mess up. This is why I'm here in jail. Don't take this route. But for me, I was present in my kids' lives. I tried to live my life in a way, like I said, that they could see this is how a man is supposed to conduct himself. And then Karima also tell you is that we took an active role of going into community and actually create mentorship programs, because even I know when I was out in the street, as you know, when I started getting into hustling and different things like that, when I went to the dark side, I was always looking for a father figure, even though I didn't, you know what I'm saying? And we're always, and young men are always looking to be guided one way or the other, whether they realize it or not. So even, so I say that to say is when I got into the game or whatever, I had these individuals that were telling me how to do things wrong, but the right way to do them wrong. So anyway, I transitioned out of that and came back into the real world, and we use this knowledge to motivate young men. We took brothers, young men off the street, showed them a skill set. First, we showed them that we care about them. You know what I mean? We listened to them. We sat down. We talked to them, young women as well. And once we got their trust, we started showing them skill sets. We showed them how to interview for jobs and different things like that. So I just think it's imperative for us as Black men to take an active role. We can't leave all the work to the women. You know what I'm saying? We got to assume responsibility for the village as well, because we're the kings, we're the warriors. You know what I mean? So we have to lead as kings, as warriors, so the next generation can be kings and warriors, and they'll have a point of reference of how to treat their women, how to treat their kids, and how to conduct themselves in a way where they'll be functional citizens. We have to leave our legacy within their soul so it can continue.
Wow, that was powerful. And especially, I especially wanted your input as a man, because we often think of young men as being the lost souls. So
well,
I mean,
they are, but we got to go find them. We have to find them. You know what I mean? I see, like Karima can tell you, these young men, I could relate to them because I was once them. You know what I mean? So them out there hustling, them doing this and doing that, I didn't pretend like, yo, man, you're wrong or whatever. Yo, you're trying to find your way. Let me help you. Let me give you an alternative to move away from that. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. But I know what's on the other end of that game if you don't get right. So being there, being able to talk to them, and then being able to show them a better way sometimes can help. And they need to see also, too, that as a Black man, that you can interact with your woman, you know, your baby's mama, your wife or whatever, and show them respect. Because all they're listening to now, these records and these TV shows, and ain't none of that about respect or whatever. So they need a real life point of reference that they can draw from. You know what I'm saying? So I just think that we as men also need to take a proactive role, because like you said, a lot of us are lost. So it's up to us to step it up and try to save us.
Wow. You're right. In my opinion, in my very humble opinion, for what it's worth. And I would like to, we're getting ready to close out this segment, but I want final words from each of you ladies on this topic and what it is we're going to do next. I will start it off by saying that I am going to continue to reach out where I see is the need. My techniques are a little unorthodox in that a lot of people say, aren't you afraid to say something? No, I'm not. I can't walk in fear if I want to reach out and open myself up. There's always a danger of when you open yourself up. You know, I might get cussed out sometimes, but that's okay. At least I've planted that seed. So that's my commitment from here on out, to continue to try to put
positive in the atmosphere of children that I encounter, as well as not just children, but also parents who are in need of support. So who's next? Who would like to speak up next and tell me their commitment?
This is Joy, and I really just commit to just continue to try to help families. I mean, this has been a part, and I do that professionally and personally. You know, when I see somebody struggling or another family struggling, you know, I try to see what I can do to help them get to the next level. And sometimes that's what they just need, just a little push and support. And so I do it, you know, as a profession and personally, you know, if it's a need there and I can support them. Sometimes I'm not the answer. Sometimes I'm just the connector, you know, to get them to the person that can't help them. You know, and at the end of the day, they got to, you know, be willing to help themselves as well. But sometimes you need a little help. So I do a little bit of both.
Okay. I can appreciate that. Next.
Me or next person?
Next person is Jackie and Sadika and Summer. Speak up, guys.
This is Sadika. So, personally, what I will continue to do is reach out. What I try to do is I'm the play date mommy. Your children can come to my house and you can leave, you know, so that mom can have that brief moment without having to be concerned with the children on that day. What I challenge everyone who's listening and everybody who's on the panel to do is reach out to a parent, offer to take their child on a Wednesday afternoon from school. Maybe come in, if you excel in math, go over and help that child do some math homework, maybe reading. Take them to a park on a Thursday. Pick a day. It could be one day a month or whatever, and commit to that time to help that family out. It'll go so far.
That is a wonderful idea, and I kind of think, Sadika, that might be a hint to me. I've kind of been falling down on my auntie duties. Is that what you're trying to say?
You know what? I don't want it to be a hint, so I'll be very clear. We need help. We need help. My children I need help getting my children to basketball practice 2 days a week. That's my current challenge to my village, and it's ironic that this was today's topic, because that's what I've been faced with.
I'm going to have to see what I can do.
Call me offline.
Yes. Ms. Jackie, how about you?
Yeah, this is Jackie. Okay, so my commitment is to continue to be part of the village. I don't have any biological children of my own, but I'm very much a caregiver and involved in parenting children in my family. And, you know, then there's the whole professional aspect of it. I think part of what my commitment is as well in terms of being a change agent is to try to plant seeds of change. So, for instance, I'll just say this really quickly. It's ironic that you asked me to do this, Jackie, because over the weekend I was dealing with a crisis being that village for another child. And part of what I had to do was educate the police, because the last thing I want the police to do is to show up and taser a teenager, you know what I mean, or do something. And so for me, being a part of that village meant educating the police around some mental health things, emotional things, and the hope that, you know, they'll pass that on to their colleagues. And so that whole each one teach one, I try to live by that. That's my commitment as being a part of the village.
Wow. If there is anyone else on who is not having technical difficulties, who has not chimed in, I believe Ms. Johnson Spite, I would like to hear your closing commitment and anyone else who is able to connect with us after that.
Sure. This is Dorothy. And first of all, let me just, you know, commend all of you on your efforts to make a difference in your communities, and especially starting with the children. That's so important. They're our future. They're our everything. And I don't think that they get what they deserve all the time. So I commend you all for doing the work and wanting to be there to save the children, and especially to the young man who understands firsthand the importance of mentoring. I think we all have probably been mentored by somebody in our lifetime, and that's a very important piece to go back and reach back and mentor a young child, truly you make a difference in their life. And sometimes you don't get always a chance to see it, but, you know, as educators and folks who are concerned about children, oftentimes you'll have children come back and say, you really touched my life when you did X, Y, Z, you know, when I was in, you know, when I was a teenager or whatever. So that's all very important. And not only are the men important in the lives of the young men, but the fathers are also important in the lives of young ladies. They need to be Absolutely. Understanding how they're supposed to be, you know, treated by a man. And I think sometimes that daddy issues leads to other things in the lives of young girls as well. My commitment will continue to be what it's been for a while, and that's just to help people heal from the trauma and the pain and the loss of grief when someone has been taken senselessly by violence. I'm continuing to do that here in Philadelphia, but I will continue to do that across the country because I think we all know that hurt people hurt, and a lot of the things that we see going on in our communities with young people are those young people who have been abandoned, who have been hurt. They hurt others. So finding ways to help heal our communities from unresolved grief issues and pain and abandonment that leads oftentimes to the anger and the violence that we see in our communities. So if anybody's interested in finding out more about Mothers in Charge, because we are trying to go across this country with the message of that, please check out our website at mothersincharge.org. And I would even like to be able to be in contact with you ladies as well, as maybe I travel around the country. I might end up in your city, and I'd like to meet with you and just sometimes just be support for one another for the change agents. We need that sometimes as well.
Amen.
Thank you.
Amen. I also wanted to ask you about, I hear that you have the ear of some very prominent people because of your organization. Would you like to share with us a little bit more about that?
I mean, we've just, you know, been on the front lines for 13 years, so a lot of times, you know, folks know about us. Well, we get opportunities to be invited to places where people, you know, we connect with. You know, Karina mentioned earlier that I had a chance to meet the Pope when he was in Philadelphia. He came to visit the prison that I'm on the Philadelphia Prison Board, and he came to visit inmates in the prison to bring them a message of hope and healing and things like that. And I had a chance to talk with him and ask him to pray for mothers who've lost children and just pray for peace, and gave him a copy of a book that we had published, and it was just an awesome experience. And a few years ago, we also had an opportunity to meet Michelle Obama at the White House. She greeted parents from all over this country who had lost children to violence, and she actually, you know, met individually with each of us there on the White House grounds. So that was amazing too. But I just really I love meeting with people who are hurting, and I can some way, you know, provide them some help and support and healing on a journey that sometimes is a very lonely one.
It sounds like that you were blessed with the spirit of empathy, and so many people need that. And I want to commend you on the work that you have done. And I will pray for you that you continue to be successful and reach many. One of the things that
Thank you.
I always say, one of the things I always say is sometimes we don't have the opportunity to see the fruition of that tree. But our job is sometimes just to plant the seed. Sometimes you never know how that seed is planted. And I say that as we round out the segment, Summer Key Lee is having some technical difficulty, and although she is still on the line, we have not been able to hear her express herself the last few minutes. So I want to apologize for that, but I do want to say something on this young woman's behalf. She is a seed that I have seen grow into fruit. And to know that the things that people put into her life when she was young saved her from a situation where she lived a life full of regret is enough for me to motivate me to continue to go. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to have her on, so that she could motivate all of us to continue to grow and each one teach one and plant the seed and all those things that we are committed to do. So I want to thank you all. You can remain on for the next segment if you choose. And what I want to, what we're going to do from here, next level, are you with me?
Yes, ma'am, I'm with you.
What I'm going to tell our listeners is that at this point in time, we're opening up the floor. We're moving into our relationship section. We're moving into our relationship section and segment. And what we want to do is we want to have you all to comment, call in with your questions for myself, Black Coffee. If you are a man that wants to ask a question, because I'm throwing my woman card out of the window, I'm going to ask for all questions. And next level, if you women want to call in and ask questions that you wanted answered, honest answers from men for, he's going to be open to answering those questions. The number is 516-387-1251. We are welcoming your questions. We want to hear what you have to say. And Karima is going to lead us into this segment by playing a selection from Mr. Next Level himself.
I want you to be my one and only lady. And I want you to be my one and only lady. Sipping wine by candlelight is the perfect way to spend the night. As we slip deeper into the moon, I'd like to pour my heart out to you. Now, every single word that you're about to hear is from my heart and so sincere, you see. I've thought about it, I've meditated on it, I've even prayed on it. So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is, I want you to be my one and only lady. You see, I spent a lot of time doing wrong, so I like to spend the rest being right. And that's why I want you to be my one and only lady. You look kind of surprised. I see some disbelief in your eyes. You think I'm not the type to settle down, that I'm into running around. Well, I'm not gonna lie, that used to be my lifestyle. But lately, I haven't been as wild as I was once before. You see, that part of me, well, doesn't exist anymore. Why should I be out there running wild when I could be here with you, making you smile? That's why I want you to be my one and only lady. I spend a lot of time doing wrong, so I like to spend the rest being right. And that's why I want you to be my one and only lady. Could I go astray when I spend most of my day
trying to figure out some new way to show you or say I love you. Now, my boys say I done fell off right, that I'm not the type of player that I used to be, but that's cool, cause I'm here with you, being the man that I'm supposed to be, you see. There comes a time when every man runs into the right woman, and for me that time is now, and that woman is you. So I gotta say what I gotta say and do what I need to do, and that is make you my one and only lady.
Now, see, next level.
Yes, ma'am.
You, that has me over here fanning, and I don't know whether it was the song or the hot flash that has me set off. Now,
well, maybe it's a combination of both. Go
maybe,
ahead.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Age might have something to do with it. I want to tell you that what I just heard is something that, speaking for the women I know, including myself, that mm-hmm. is something we long to hear from the right man. What
right.
made you, what made you put that together for us and give us hope?
I mean, you know, realistically, even brothers, you know, we come to a point, you know, we kind of be wandering out, kind of wandering aimlessly. But then, you know, we do get to a point to whereas, you know, we're ready to commit. And so this song is about, you know, coming to that moment and meeting that woman that you realize that, you know, it's going to make you a better man. You need to have her in your life to have a life, you know what I mean, to grow. And a lot of times what I've done too, you know, I've had brothers that have listened to my music and been like, man, I would love to be able to talk like that, but I can't, you know. So I wanted to put together some songs that, you know, and actually I've done shows where when I tell them, like, look, your man might not be able to maybe speak as eloquently as I do, but this is what he's feeling, this is what he's saying. So basically, you know, I just try to put into words what a man is feeling when he meets the right woman and he's ready to commit to her.
Mm. Well, I want to say to all the ladies that are listening, he's taken. I have to say this every week. He's taken. Don't be trying to inbox me and ask me about none of that. Okay? Take it. We're just going to allow him to answer those questions for those men that we're waiting on. And in my case, searching under rocks for. So so I want to know, is there anything that you would like to ask me, Mario, to start this segment off and to get the questions jumping off?
Well, I remember we had talked earlier, and you said it was something that you felt that sometimes can be an issue with men when they meet professional women that may be a little bit more successful than them, and for somehow, some reason or another, they feel intimidated or they feel the need to compete with them. I just wanted to clarify that with you, that that's not really what y'all are looking for, right? Is that because you make more money than a man, do you look down on him, or do you think that you're more than him, or do you think that he's less than you?
Nope. Not at all. I think for women it's different because we've had those traditional roles of, you know, and we bought into the hype. We bought into the hype of Cinderella and all that, where the
the prince comes in and rescues us, so we're used to having that expectation. I think a lot of times that we carry that fairy tale as women. We carry that fairy tale in our minds. And sometimes, you know, you speaking from the male perspective, but I'm going to call us women out. Sometimes if a man doesn't have everything we think he's supposed to in order to impress our friends, we look down or dismiss that man. Down on or dismiss that man. And, you know, for me, the strongest thing about my man is his character. That's got to be what's the strongest thing about him. Now, mind you, if you 5'2" tall and 5'8" around, you might need a fat wallet to stand on to make you look a little better. But other than that, you know, we can work it.
Right.
Now I want to open up the line for a couple of callers. We have a caller from 44405. Would you introduce yourself and tell us where you're calling from and what your question is? Caller, are you listening? Okay, let's move on to caller from 404-396. Are we having technical difficulties tonight?
Well, sometimes people call in and they just want to listen.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if they actually had a question, but yeah, sometimes they'll just call on the line and I don't know, maybe they might not know that you're calling out their number. So, you know, that might be the case, you know.
Okay,
but
let's try this.
Go ahead, Glenn.
We have another one on the line that I would like to try, and that's 404-839. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Tell us who you are.
Black Coffee?
I'm doing great. It's fabulous to be alive tonight.
Right, it is. It truly is. I just doing my Monday night blog talk thing, and I find a random show, and I hit gold because I found a show in my hometown that, you know, that's talking grown folks talk. So I'm glad to be on the show tonight. This is a perfect show for me because I'm a single black male.
Okay.
Over 40 and never intimidated by a woman that's successful. You know, never intimidated by a black woman that's successful. In fact, I applaud it. I'm a single dad, and I have a difficult time. I'm off the dating scene, but I have a difficult time because I'm single dad. And my question is, as a, you know, if there's any single moms out there, you know, how do y'all juggle your life with your kids? And because me, I'm one of those guys that I don't want a whole lot of females around. You know, I got a daughter that I'm raising. I've had her whole life, and I don't want a lot of people in and out, you know, so I'm very mindful of that. And so if there's any single moms, you know, I would love to get some tips on how they've managed.
Okay. Well, I'm going to speak from the woman's perspective. First of all, I want to commend you on stepping up and doing what you're supposed to for your child. That's the first thing I want to say. And I also want to commend you for not wanting to have the thought parade in front of your daughter. So,
I couldn't do that. I was raised by a man. You know, my father and my mother, you know, my mother and father had 16. So, you know, I couldn't be nothing but a man because I was raised by a man, you know. And so,
have mercy, he had to be if she kept having children like that.
Yeah, they had the first 10 because they didn't have no TV. So they didn't have no
TV. And the other
she knew what it was when he got out working.
The other six was cause they went off at a certain time. Okay.
Yeah. Show went off 8 o'clock back then. You know.
Okay, but yeah. Also, you know, I have the experience of having been unattached while I was raising a child, and one of the mistakes I made in that point in time was not with him. Was not parent, not about parenting him. It was about forgetting about me. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time during that time, you know, single and celibate. And I realized that when that point in time was over, I had missed out on a lot of opportunity.
Right.
So, you know, my suggestion from a woman having had that experience is that you make a point of making some time for yourself. Because guess what? One day that daughter is going to be grown up and gone, and who are you going to be sitting there with?
Right.
So to first thing is to make some time for yourself to be able to go out and experience. And every woman you meet does not have to be someone that is a commitment. It can turn out to be a friend who may be able to help you with some issues with your daughter. And
right.
And just because you introduce your daughter to a woman does not mean she has to be coming out of your bedroom. She could be just a friend. So, you know, to be able to show your daughter that you can have a platonic friendship with somebody, get to know people without crossing the line, I think it's going to be important to you raising her too, as well as being important to you on the social side.
Right. Yeah, I sociably, I don't ever have a problem, you know, because, you know, not trying to brag or whatever, you know, because I got four daughters. I'm a dude that, you know, I'm the party guy, the fun guy, the in the club every weekend guy, and I'm too old for that now, and my daughter is at that right age, you know, right almost 11 years old now. And that's the thing that I needed in my life to change my life, to take me from being the party guy in my 30s, you know, and into my mid-30s, you know. And she came along and changed the whole thing where I think it made me a aware person, you know. Because as men, I've been married before, you know. I was one of those guys, like, you know, if I brought home the money and they got everything, what you complaining about, you know? And
ooh,
now looking at, right, and now looking at it, you know, from the gotta be mama and daddy, that little money ain't nothing. It really, you know, is, man, my ex-wife now, I thank God for her so much now for all that she did as a mother, you know. Her grass, her lawnmower broke. That one cut the grass. I told her boyfriend, I said, I ain't trying to get her back, man. I just want to make sure these yards stay straight, you know? Man, that little
you
child
realize how
nothing.
Much. You realize how much you needed to appreciate her at this point, right?
What? I'm sorry. I bet not see her and her hair's not done. I'm paying for that hairdo because I thank God, man, because... You know, I thought that the little child support check and all that was doing something that really wasn't, you know, because the kids, you know, I heard you talking about a village. You know, it takes a lot. And we have to, you know, really, you know, we have to really think, you know, today it's more difficult to rear kids than it was when I was coming up because we did have a village. We had a community. We knew our neighbors. You know, the teachers went to our church, you know, and it was really a community. Today, you don't know anybody that lives across the street from you, barely, you know.
Right.
That's true.
Let me say something right here, too, man, because I actually was in the same situation because my oldest is my daughter, you know, and I think as a man, you know, you really want to be protective. Because you think about the way that you thought when you was out there doing whatever, and you don't want her to be exposed to nobody that's going to contaminate her, you know what I mean, with all of that madness and everything like that. And
right.
I think, like I said, it's imperative, too, that you know, and I think that you're cognizant of, well, I need to conduct myself so she knows what a man is supposed to look like, how a man is supposed to move, how a man is supposed to carry himself, how a man is supposed to respect her. So she sees you going to work every day. She sees you coming home, taking care of bills, handling things. She sees what it is to come home and feel safe because daddy's there. You know what I mean?
So
it's imperative for you to set those examples. And sometimes we can be like almost a little overprotective, you know what I mean? Because, and I guess that's our nature, but at some point, though, we do have to realize that, you know what I mean? I can be daddy, this, that, and the other, but even like you said, in your situations, in your relationships, you don't want to necessarily cut yourself off because, you know, you just want to be to the point to where, like she was saying, if you do have a relationship, she can see how a real man is supposed to treat a woman. But then also she can see, you know, how a real man chooses the right woman. We're going to make some mistakes and different things like that, but it's imperative to when you have, because your daughter's always watching daddy. She's always watching daddy. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you're cognizant of what you leave her with. So I would just say that I know we're running out of time, but it's just I commend you because I know how it is to raise a girl, especially, look, she only 11, bro. Mine went through teenage years and this, that, and the other. But I'm going to tell you the most important thing that I established with my daughter. Now, I was still her daddy. I wasn't going for the okey-doke. But what I did establish with her is that, look, you can come and talk to me. You know what I mean? We have to have an open dialogue. No matter what it is, you know, feel comfortable to talk to me, man, because if she doesn't, because she needs to have that line of communication with you, because it's imperative for her to understand that whoever I wind up with, I need to be able to communicate with him, because if I can't communicate with him, this thing ain't going to work. How do I know he respects me if he don't want to listen to what I have to say, if he doesn't want to be a part of pulling together? That's real imperative, you know what I mean? Because even now, my daughter's grown now, married and everything, but I sat down with her husband. He was like, man, you know, man, Monique is deep sometimes, man. We be chopping it up, and she be like right there with me, man, you know, and she don't take no stuff. I said, that's how I raised her. Not to be like she ain't no gangster or anything like that, but I told her, yo, look, you got to value you first. I don't care what a guy come in here, how good the sex is, this, that ain't got nothing to do with a real man. You know, I mean, it's good to have good sex, but what I'm saying is that he got to respect you first and foremost. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you got to stay, and you got to be willing to walk if it ain't right. But anyway, man, I commend you again, man. And
I don't have a choice. You know, I appreciate it, but I don't have a choice, man. You know, I got four daughters, two of them grown. One that's my third daughter is a senior in high school, going to summer Ivy League school at the end of this school season, and then my baby, you know, and so, you know, I'm very close to my kids. I'm you know, I do hair, I braid hair,
too,
I do it all, I cook,
I did too.
So when women come in, they get culture shock when they come around me, because I'm self.
Because they're not used to seeing that. You know what I mean?
Hold up. Y'all giving me a little bit too much sexy for just one night. Y'all got me over here fanning. This good talk from good men has, boys, y'all better cut it out. So,
hey, brother, what's your name? What's the caller's name? We didn't get his name.
Oh, DC. DC.
Yeah. Well, thank you, brother. I think we got to get ready to wrap it up. But maybe this could be another show in and of itself.
I was about to ask DC if he would call in next week. We can continue this and build a show around it. Are you with us, DC?
Yeah, I definitely call in again. Yeah.
I would love that because, yes, next week, Monday night at 9 Eastern.
Okay, Monday night, 9 p.m.
Yes,
Eastern time.
You have been a breath of fresh air for me, and I'm going to continue to dye my hair and put on my makeup and not give up because I know there are men like you out there.
So I'm going to put the Twinkie down and pick up the candy.
Right, but make sure it's your hair now. You want to know what black men love? I can tell you what we love. 95% of black men love a natural black woman. That's
well,
what we
baby,
love.
you ain't seen my picture because I got it short and curly.
So all the sisters that's wearing we ain't hating on you. But if you want to know what we prefer, 95% of men love natural, your own hair. So,
DC, I'm going to tell you a secret about women.
What?
Before we wrap it up. Now, you're going to find women closer on your age who going to do
right.
stuff like me with the short natural hair. And the
right.
reason being is because these things start coming along called hot flashes.
Right.
And you really don't want to see a woman with a weave that's ready to be taken out have a hot flash.
I see that.
That,
my family
that ain't nowhere near cute. That ain't nowhere near cute, I'm telling you.
My sister,
so,
she's going through that. She took her wig off and started fanning at the family.
Man, I know what you're talking. Boy, you better go look at that picture of my hair. But at any rate, we have run out of time, and DC, please, please, please don't let me down. I expect you to be here for me next week, bro.
Okay, I got you on my office wall, I promise.
Okay, then. And next level, as always, you've taken me to another mental space and given me something to feed on for a week, boy.
Thank you, ma'am. No problem. Anything I can do. Glad to be a servant.
All right, don't say anything because you already told me you got a woman. So,
I want to hold your hand and walk with you.